The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher. Welcome back to another week of NFL coverage right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 12 weeks of the 2017 NFL season are in the books, and man, oh man, do we got a lot of things to talk about on this podcast today, starting off with the Raiders' victory over the Denver Broncos to get back on track all the way to their brawl on the sideline between Michael Crabtree and Aqib Talib in the return of hashtag NFL Fight Night. We then go ahead and look at every single other game from week 12 of the 2017 NFL season and review all of our picks and all of our winners before moving on to week 13 of the 2017 NFL season in our weekly betting segment, Straight Cash Homie, where we look at every single matchup against the point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. So let's not waste no more time. Let's see where we won you some money, see where we're going to get you some money next week, and hop straight into this Raiders-Broncos game, the brawl in Oakland. Let's get it.
Talib reaches in, grabbed a go chain,
yeah,
and ripped it apart.
Crabtree is in disbelief.
Disrespectful.
I give you warning.
Yeah, just too much. Like you see the dude, what he doing in front of me. Like, what you want me to do? I can't react. They're gonna kick me out. Then I'm the bad guy.
Marshawn, the long back, they give it to him again off the right side. Von Miller comes slanting down. He's able to trip him up, and Marshawn with a good run. Now there's a fight over on the Broncos sideline. Michael Crabtree is fighting with Aqib Talib. Aqib Talib, I think, went at Michael Crabtree. It's a brawl over on the Broncos sideline. And they are really going at it. They are throwing punches here. Multiple guys are swinging. Crabtree's got his helmet off. They're all going to be ejected, Tom.
What?
They're all going to be kicked out. Talib punched Crabtree. We have a replay now of Aqib Talib throwing a left hand and punching Crabtree, who did not have a helmet on.
Both of those players are disqualified.
Kicked them both out.
I'll be darned.
This game's out. They're going to lob it against Langley. Caught! Touchdown! They go at Brandon Langley. Glenn for Aqib Talib. And here's Irvin coming around and sacking Paxton Lynch. Pocket collapsing. Khalil Mack will get him and drop him.
And yup, the Raiders beat the Broncos 21-24 to expand the all-time record against those damn Donkeys to 62-51-2 to improve to 5-6 on the year, and they're now only one game back of the AFC West as the Broncos lose their seventh straight loss for the first time in 50 years. And man, oh man, where there are a bunch of storylines coming into this game, from the Raiders firing their defensive coordinator Ken Norton and promoting John Pagano to Denver firing their offensive coordinator and promoting an ex-Raider offensive coordinator, Bill Musgrave, to go and lead the Broncos offense, with Paxton Lynch getting his first start of his NFL career. And man, oh man, these storylines didn't even matter, because as soon as we got into the game, it looked like hashtag NFL Fight Night was back, with round two between Michael Crabtree and Aqib Talib. The battle for the championship chain around the world, part two. Michael Crabtree goes up against Aqib Talib from the instinct, from the get-go, from the jump. A lot of people on the Broncos are calling out Crabtree, saying, hey, he wasn't here to play football today. He was here to fight, and that damn near might be the case, because Michael Crabtree showed up, and on Marshawn Lynch's first run, he goes downfield to block Chris Harris Jr. and throws an uppercut to the body. Now, that's some old-school defense defensive lineman technique when you're trying to get that rip move to get by, hit the lineman in the gut. Well, Crabtree was giving gut shots to Chris Harris and knocked him out of the game from the get-go. Chris Harris was pointing at the sideline, calling out Crabtree, and it did not take too much longer for the deck of cards to crumble down, because on the very next play, Michael Crabtree then lines up on Aqib Talib, and Crabtree's just trying to get his best blocks in the day in early after he gave the uppercut to Chris Harris Jr. He goes, and as he's blocking Aqib Talib, punk-ass Aqib Talib wants to again try to snatch his chain, trying to pull some Debo from Friday shit, trying to be a fake tough guy, pulls his chain, but this time, instead of running away like he did last year, as he's pulling the chain, Michael Crabtree is still engaged in the block, and Crabtree drives his ass out of bounds, pancakes him to the ground, and a full-scale brawl breaks out. I like to call the Raiders offensive line the car insurance. Well, this game, they're looking like Crabtree insurance, because once that brawl started, we saw Donald Penn come in flying with the right hook, squared up quick. They didn't want no problems. We saw Rodney Hudson flying in there. We saw Gabe Jackson flying in there and hitting a couple guys as well. It did turn out that he pushed a referee, so Gabe Jackson was one of the few that got ejected. But man, oh man, what a brawl. And as soon as it got pushed on from the sideline, and kept on going towards the middle of the field. Michael Crabtree had his helmet ripped off. Next thing you know, Khalib's chasing him down again. They square up. Crabtree throws a punch. Talib throws a punch. Michael Crabtree ducks the left, grabs him by the face mask, pokes him in the eye, moves him around. And I think, honestly, Aqib Talib got punked. Everyone wants to say, oh, he's such a tough guy. He deboed him. He took his chain again. Michael Crabtree got mugged on the field. Did he? Because he got pancaked. Aqib Talib got straight pancaked, put on his ass, got poked on the eye after he swung and missed, and then kept his helmet on looking like a retard trying to square up with Michael Crabtree. Hey, Aqib Talib, if you're such a tough guy, take the goddamn helmet off and square up with the guy. Let's go. We can settle this. You're both from Texas. Why don't you go meet up in H-Town? Hell, put this on pay-per-view. Put this on hashtag NFL Fight Night, because this is just going on and on and on. This stems from the game last year, obviously, with Talib snatching his chain and not getting suspended at all. This year, Michael Crabtree said, damn, last year, I got called a bitch when I didn't react, but I stayed in the game. Well, this year, I reacted, and now I got kicked out. It seems to me he was in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because you got all these internet tough guys and keyboard warriors calling Michael Crabtree a bitch last year because he didn't respond. Well, what did I say last year on this very same podcast? If he would have responded, he would have got kicked out, would have hurt the Raiders, would have hurt the team. Well, this year, he was no bitch. He went after Aqib Talib, and guess what happened? He got kicked out, and now he's suspended for 2 games. So like I said, it's on a flip of a coin, 50-50. I can't be too mad at Crabtree, because I wasn't going to sit there and watch him get punked again. I'm glad he stood up for himself, but goddamn, Aqib Talib, you're a punk. Go back to the club and shoot yourself in the leg again. Hell, ice up, son, as you get a 2-game suspension. Let me call out Steve Smith to remind you what he did to Aqib Talib back in the day. The Broncos season is over. It doesn't matter their suspension for them, but this is going to hurt the Raiders with a 2-game suspension from Michael Crabtree. He's going to miss the Giants game, miss the Chiefs game. Luckily enough, Gabe Jackson was not suspended, even though he was ejected. I thought he could get suspended, kind of like Marshawn Lynch when he pushed the referee and got suspended for a game. Luckily, Gabe Jackson did not get suspended, so he will still be for this Raiders offensive line. But man, oh man, what a crazy way to start the game. Crabtree versus Aqib Talib, part 2, both suspended 2 games, and we'll move on to the second quarter of the game now, because the first quarter was an ugly one, and it ended with Derek Carr getting strip sacked on his own 24-yard line. The Broncos recovered, and Paxton Lynch then hits Devontae Booker down the field one-on-one for a 20-yard touchdown. But wait, the call was reversed, and Booker's knee was down at the 1-yard line. The Broncos then line up on first and goal, get stuffed. They try to pass on second and goal with a play action pass. It gets tipped, and it falls into the hands of Navarro Bowman for an interception. Yes, you heard me correctly. The Raiders got an interception. The drought is over, and all it took was to sacrifice the body of Ken Norton Jr. Yes, we fired the defensive coordinator and finally got our first interception of the year. Football gods, take the sacrifice and give us some more interceptions throughout the rest of this season, because man, oh man, we set an NFL record for going 11 weeks without an interception, and the Raiders finally got a turnover, and this one was huge. And the funniest thing about it was this was Navarro Bowman, a guy who is strictly a run-stuffing linebacker. We all know about his Achilles injuries and his limitations in coverage now, and we bring him in. He's only on the team for a couple weeks, and he gets the pick. Navarro Bowman, man, I love you, Ari, so much. as a Raider than I ever did as a 49er. I'm so glad you're across the bay. But the Raiders defense finally coming up big with that interception, and the Raiders offense just had to capitalize off of that turnover as they went 80 yards in 8 plays behind a full running back by committee. Marshawn Lynch was running the ball, Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington, and they were moving the rock, and they topped off that drive with a 9-yard double move to Amari Cooper on the fade route to go up 7-0, and the Raiders take the lead. I thought this was a great play call because after Aqib Talib got ejected, obviously we want to attack the third and fourth string corners for the Broncos. That's exactly what Amari Cooper and Derek Carr did with his double move, the fake slant to the fade to the outside, and the Raiders take the lead 7-0. Following up that big interception, the defense steps up again with another 3-and-out after a sack by Danico Autry. He had a huge game, and Marshawn Lynch and the Raiders then drive 52 yards in 8 plays and cap it off with Marshawn Lynch's 1-yard touchdown run to put the Raiders up 14-0 right before the half. Autry and Irvin get a couple sacks to end halftime, and then we move on to the third quarter where the second half starts with even more pressure as Bruce Irvin and Autry get a couple more sacks. They both ended with 2 on the day. The Raiders offense then put on some pressure of their own as they scored on the next 7 plays after Derek Carr hits Johnny Holton deep for a 47-yard bomb. He then caps it off with a 6-yard touchdown pass to Jalen Richard out of the backfield, and the Raiders take the lead 21-0. This game's over. It's skunked. 21 skunked. Somebody restart the console because the Broncos got ran out of the building in Oakland, and I thought the game was over once the Raiders went up 21-0, but then we got a little bit of change in momentum as Paxton Lynch gets hurt, goes down. Trevor Siemian comes into the field for an injured Paxton Lynch. He ends up fighting Cody Lattimore for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. The Raiders then drive back of the field again. Georgi Tavecchio misses a field goal, and it's still only 21-7. Siemian then gets lucky on his next drive, completes a couple tip passes that should have been an interception by Carl Joseph, drives down the field, hits Fowler for his second touchdown of the day, and they're down 21-14, and it actually looks like a game, but this wasn't a game at all because the Broncos were dumb enough when they were down by one touchdown with about 2.5 minutes left. They pooched kicked instead of onside kicking. They tried to onside kick after their first touchdown. It was unsuccessful. They didn't even try again. And they pooched it, and that brought out Derek Carr to drop the dagger in the Broncos because once he got the ball in a third and long situation, he connects deep with Cordell Patterson to end the game, and this was an absolute dime. Broncos looked like they had man-on-man coverage across the board. They were bringing pressure up the middle. There was no safety over top. The middle of the field was wide open, and Derek Carr takes a couple drops back, sees Cordell Patterson over the middle, and just floats it like he's Rookie of the Year. Floated, and he gets it up. Cordell Patterson runs underneath it, catches it, adds another 20 yards after the catch, and it's game over. The Raiders win 21-14. I thought that was a great play call by Jack Del Rio and Todd Downing after the game. Jack Del Rio said, hey, we were playing to win the game. We wanted to throw the ball downfield. We were not going to sit back and hope just to hang on and see if the Broncos were scored because they put up a couple points in the fourth quarter. But as I said, the Raiders won this game pretty convincingly, 21-14. Should have been 24 if we would have made that field goal. These last 14 points were just garbage time points, so I'm really not too impressed with the Denver Broncos at all. I wasn't too impressed with Paxton Lynch making his first start, but what I am impressed with is this Raiders defense. As I mentioned, got our first interception of the year after we sacrificed Ken Norton. I am kind of skeptical because I don't know if John Pagano made the defense that much better or if the Broncos offense is just really that bad and Paxton Lynch is really that bad because we don't know. We still never seen this guy. But what I did like is obviously we're bottom of the league's interception. We were also bottom of the league in sacks. We only had 14 the whole entire season. Well, we had 5 sacks this game against the Broncos. I think John Pagano did a great job by moving Khalil Mack around. He was up the middle. He was at nose guard. He was all over the place, and he had 5 quarterback pressures and 1 big sack. He also tipped down a couple balls at the line. Like I mentioned on last week's podcast, I was looking for a big game from Bruce Irvin, and guess what? Bruce Irvin delivered with 2 sacks and a forced fumble, and Danico Autry playing phenomenal. He's starting to look like Mario Edwards was starting to look like last year when Mack was getting double, triple teamed. He got the one-on-one coverage. Danico Autry made the most of it and had 2 sacks for his first multi-sack game as a Raider, and he was looking phenomenal. And then the man I already talked about earlier who got the first INT of the season, Navarro Bowman. Man, oh man, what a pickup this has been for a Raider. He leads the Raiders in tackles once again for the 5th, 6th straight games, and he has looked phenomenal since signing. And truly, his Raiders defense looked better, and this was the best that the Raiders defense looked all year. Of course, I've got to put an asterisk because we were playing the Broncos offense, but we allowed a season low 219 yards, allowed only 54 first half yards, allowed only 30 rushing yards on 13 attempts, and no receiver for the Broncos had over 50 yards. That is looking like an elite defense, but what's the opposite word for elite? Disgraceful offense? Yeah, that's the Broncos. That's how you describe the Broncos. But hey, Sean Smith, we harped on him on the first half of the season of this podcast. He's been playing a lot better. Shalom Lawani's coming in, getting some time at safety. Obi Melifonwu didn't play too much this game, but these younger guys are starting to get more and more reps, and his defense is looking better and better every single week. And let's go ahead and talk about this offense, because it seems that Todd Downing is finally starting to get a grips for things a little bit after putting up 21 unanswered points. Derek Carr completed 18 of 24 passes for a 72% completion rate, throwing for 253 yards, two touchdowns, and a 136 QBR. And he did most of this without his top two wide receivers. As I've mentioned, Michael Crabtree left the game early, got ejected, now suspended for 2 weeks. Amari Cooper did have a touchdown in this game, as we talked about, but he did leave the game in a concussion after he got hit over the middle, and it was a scary hit. His eyes were closed, his arms weren't moving. Luckily, we did see his legs move. There's also a possibility that he has an ankle injury on top of a concussion. We hope a speedy recovery for Amari Cooper, especially not having Crabtree the next 2 weeks now. We need Cooper to get back, but Cordell Patterson and Johnny Holton stepped up big. They both had huge plays. Cordell Patterson was the leading receiver, 3 catches, 72 yards. Johnny Holton had that big catch to set up that Jalen Richard touchdown, and the MVP of this offense today was Marshawn Lynch. This man is playing his best football of the season. I talked about it last week. I talked about it a couple weeks ago against the Dolphins. This man had a season-high 26 carries, 67 yards, and a touchdown, and he did add 3 catches, 44 yards, so he had over 100 yards on the day, and this is exactly what I wanted to see. Get the lead and run the ball with Marshawn in the second half. I've been calling it for it all year long, and he looked phenomenal today. He was running with attitude. He was running aggressively, and he really did give that build-a-bully mentality to this Raiders offense as he just puts his helmet down and just fucking runs through a motherfucker's face.
I'm just about that action, boss.
But in general, this whole entire running back by committee did great today. They rushed for over 100 yards against his Broncos defense. This offensive line played phenomenal, not only getting in and backing up Crabtree, throwing haymakers, but they controlled the trenches. Kelechi Osemele played flawlessly. John Feliciano filled in great for Gabe Jackson after he was ejected. Donald Penn came in with those haymakers and played great. We controlled the trenches. We controlled the time of possession, holding the ball for over 11 minutes longer than the Denver Broncos did, and we controlled the field. I gotta give a shout out to Marquette King, the man who can punt the ball inside the 10 at any given moment. He had 4 punt downs inside the 10-yard line. As I mentioned, Cordell Patterson did a great job as a wide receiver. He's also one of the best special team players in the league. Down on the ball at the 1-yard line, Marquette King was flipping the field every chance he got and backing up Paxton Lynch and his offense into their own territory, and they couldn't get anything going. And I thought we played fantastic on not only the offensive side of the ball, the defense side of the ball, but also special teams. This was a full force victory, complete domination by the Raiders. Like I said, it may not look like it because it was only a 21-14 score, but this game could have easily been 24-0. Hell, if Paxton Lynch didn't get hurt, I don't think they would have scored. They're probably better off starting Trevor Siemian, but they didn't. And at the end of the day, the Raiders got the job done, 21-14, get back to 5-6, and get back to only one game out of the AFC West. What have I been talking about this whole entire season on this podcast? Everybody, oh, the Raiders season's over. You guys are shot. You guys are done. Well, look at the fucking Kansas City Chiefs falling apart, and now we're only one game back. I've been saying, hey, watch out for the wild card. Watch out for the wild card. And I said we could still get a chance at this AFC West because everybody is falling apart. The Chiefs have lost 5 of the last 6, and they're just opening the door for the Raiders. The Broncos are pretty much out now. It's between us, the Chargers, and the Chiefs. So let's get it. Let's go, Raiders. Let's get into the playoffs just like I said we would, because the season's not over yet. We still got to play the Chargers and the Chiefs again. And man, oh man, I can't wait. But before we get into the preview for the future of the Raiders, let's go ahead and look at what happened right here on the Bays Golden Days podcast in week 12 of the 2017 season by the numbers.
It's the NFL numbers week 12 in review. 17 consecutive seasons, the Patriots have clinched a winning record, now the longest streak since 1970. They surpassed Tom Landry's Cowboys and Bill Walsh's 49ers. 10 consecutive losing seasons, the Rams endured entering 2017, which had been the NFL's longest active streak. They snapped it with their 8th win on Sunday. 28 touchdown passes for Carson Wentz, most ever by an Eagles quarterback through 11 games. 3 career games of 250 or more receiving yards for Julio Jones, the only player in history with more than one such game. 2 players since 1970 to reach 500 rushing yards and 500 receiving yards in his first 11 NFL games. Herschel Walker in 1986 and now Alvin Kamara. 6 points scored on Chargers rookie Desmond King's first career interception return, and he called it all the way back in April.
He's gonna take it to Desmond King, 90 yards on the pick 6.
And that's the NFL numbers week 12 in review.
NFL week 12 by the numbers as we wrap up November. I think I gotta say my favorite number from November would have to be 0, as there were 5 teams this year that joined the No Win November Club. Yes, you might have heard of No Shave November, maybe even No Nut November, but No Win November in the NFL for the Broncos, the Browns, the Dolphins, the Bears, and the Chiefs. None of those teams won at all in November, and let's go ahead and talk about the AFC West and those Kansas City Chiefs, who are now 6-5 and 1-5 in our last 6 games. As I mentioned, the lead go-getters in the no-win November after everything was going so right for Alex Smith and the Chiefs. It looks like Arrowhead is finally pointing down in the wrong direction, because Alex Smith, after starting off putting up these MVP numbers and everybody said Alex Smith's in the MVP talk, you even got Niner fans saying, hey, if we would have just kept Alex Smith, we would have had a Super Bowl by now. Well, now Alex Smith is looking like the Alex Smith that got benched for Colin Kaepernick, and people are already calling for Robert Mahomes to call in Kaepernick 2.0 to come and take his job, because Alex Smith, after not throwing a pick the first 8-9 weeks of the season, throws another one and another one and another one and another big one in the fourth quarter this game against the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills are still trying to figure out who the hell is playing quarterback. Well, I think they should stick with Tyrod Taylor, because he only needed 183 yards but 1 touchdown, didn't have any turnovers. You can't say that when Peterman's in, because he had 5 picks in the first half. So it looks like they finally made the right decision. But really, the Bills won this all on defense, because Tyrod Taylor didn't have a huge day. LeSean McCoy only hit 22 carries, 49 yards. Hell, no one really did anything that much. They only needed 16 points to win, as they won 16-10. And where was the offense from the Chiefs? Alex Smith was not only the leader passer, but he was the leading rusher with 5 carries for 35 yards. Where is Kareem Hunt? He has been absolutely shut down the last 4 or 5 games, has been nowhere in sight during this 1-5 losing streak. Where is he? I thought he was rookie of the year. I thought he was beating Adrian Peterson's most games consecutive starts with 100 yards. What has happened to this Kansas City Chiefs offense in general? Tyreek Hill is not making big plays. You've got Travis Kelce. You've got all these weapons, and the Chiefs are falling apart, but I can't even be mad about it, because I told you to take the Bills and the points, and we won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. So let's go ahead and continue now in that AFC West as we move over from Sunday to Thanksgiving, as the Chargers, the Los Angeles Chargers, put a Hollywood beatdown on the Dallas Cowboys like it was straight out of a Hollywood script, because the Chargers came in and took whatever they wanted in Dallas, in Jerry World, on Thanksgiving Day, as Phillip Rivers threw for 434 yards. Yes, 434 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had an 82% completion rate. This is actually the first time that Phillip Rivers has thrown for over 425 yards and won. Usually it's all garbage time, but Phillip Rivers, they went up early and they went up quick and they ran away with this game, absolutely demolishing the Cowboys in the second half. Melvin Gordon only needed 65 yards, but it was Keenan Allen who was connecting with Phillip Rivers all day with 11 catches, 172 yards, and a touchdown. And his Dallas Cowboys team continues to struggle with no Ezekiel Elliott. Without Zeke, they have now lost 3 straight games, and in those games, they have scored less than 10 points for the first time in franchise history. Yes, 3 back-to-back-to-back games where you couldn't even score double digits. And the man who's suffering the most without Ezekiel Elliott is Dak Prescott. Threw for 179 yards and 2 interceptions. That brings his total now without Ezekiel Elliott to 5 interceptions, no touchdowns, and he has still yet to throw over 200 yards without Ezekiel Elliott. We thought they'd be better this week with Tyron Smith coming back, but they lost another one of their guards earlier in the game. This Cowboys offensive line is falling apart, and this Cowboys team is falling apart. Rod Smith was their leading rusher. Man, sitting at 5-6 now, the Eagles are in first place with a 10-1 record. I don't think they're going to be able to chase them down. It's going to be a lot harder to get into the playoffs as a wild card team in the NFC than it is for an AFC. The Cowboys might be looking like they are done as they lose in an embarrassing game at home to the Chargers on Thanksgiving, the second biggest blowout on Thanksgiving ever against the Cowboys. And man, oh man, how embarrassing was that? But hey, they weren't the only team that played from the NFC East on Thanksgiving, because we had the night game matchup between the Giants and the Redskins, and which was probably one of the worst Thanksgiving games I ever saw. I'm not even going to pretend like this was a good game. Honestly, I just kept on going for seconds and thirds on pie and ice cream instead of even paying attention. Kirk Cousins got the win, throwing for 242 yards, 2 touchdowns. He did have an interception, but he passed over 3,000 yards for the third time in a row in his career. He's the first quarterback in Redskins history to throw for over 3,000 yards in 3 consecutive years, and the Redskins still can't decide if they want to pay him. They said, we still got to decide over his last 5 games. You franchise tagged in the past 3 years, giving him, what, $50, $75 million, and you still don't know if you want to pay the guy? The Redskins, you're a joke. You goddamn need to change your name already with this political correctness crap that we're going through. Whatever, the Redskins won. Lost you some money here on the Bays Golden Days. I told you to take the Giants and the points, and the Redskins just had to kick a field goal to cover the spread at the very end of the game. Whatever, both these teams suck. None of them are making another playoffs, and the Giants are officially eliminated from playoff contention. Let's stop talking about these 2 weak teams in the NFC East and talk about the number 1 team in the NFC East, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. As I mentioned, they improved to 10-1 with a huge 31-3 win over the Bears. They covered that 13.5-point spread and won you some money right here on the Bays Golden Days. A lot of people are now coming after the Eagles because with success comes the haters, of course. People are calling out that the Eagles do have the easiest schedule based on win percentage, but they are the last undefeated home team left in the NFL, and they have won their last 5 games by double digits. That's how well Carson Wentz is playing after he threw for 227 yards, 3 touchdowns. The man is right up there in the MVP conversation, and he is number 1 in Pro Bowl votes. He connected with Zach Ertz 10 times for 103 yards and a touchdown. Alshon Jeffrey also got a touchdown, his 7th of the year, which added a $250,000 incentive to his salary. And this Eagles defense, we talked about all these no-win Novembers, they only allowed 1 touchdown in all of November. The way that this Eagles defense is playing lights out, paired with Carson Wentz and all these new weapons that he has this year, the Eagles truly are looking like a Super Bowl contender led by a young Carson Wentz who is playing at an MVP level, and they're sitting pretty at 10-1, first place in the NFC East. And let's go ahead and jump now from the NFC East to the NFC North, because we talked about the Bears losing. We'll go ahead and talk about the Vikings and Lions as we hop back into Thanksgiving. This was probably the best Thanksgiving game of the day, the most competitive in the morning, and we won you some money with the Vikings covering that -3-point spread right here on the Bays Golden Days. Case Keenum has been playing phenomenal since he took over for Sam Bradford, who took over for Teddy Bridgewater, who's Case Keenum has already now matched Teddy Bridgewater's season high in touchdown passes. Keenum has 14 this year after he threw for 2 more on Thanksgiving, 282 yards. He actually rushed a touchdown in also and hosted a whole Thanksgiving feast, not only right there in the end zone after he scored, but after the game, he bring his whole line in, was feeding him turkey legs and everything, and they just completely dominated this game. The Lions did try to make it interesting late with Matthew Stafford throwing for 250 yards and 2 touchdowns. Marvin Jones had one hell of a catch, 6 catches, 109 yards, and 2 touchdowns. One of his touchdowns came when he absolutely mossed the 11th and 12th defender on the field. Yes, the Vikings had 12 guys on the field trying to cover Marvin Jones, but they could not stop him as he absolutely mossed 2 defenders for the touchdown. But he wasn't even the best wide receiver on the day. That belongs to the man across the field, Adam Thielen, 8 catches, 89 yards. He's the first 1,000-yard receiver for the Minnesota Vikings since 2009, and this guy has been playing phenomenal, and he's looking like Case Keenum's best friend right now as they continue to connect and they continue to win games. Latavius Murray also had 84 yards and a touchdown, and the Vikings roll 30-23, cover that spread, win you some money here, and improve to 9-2 to settle into first place in the NFC North. And let's go ahead and talk about the team that everybody thought would win win the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers, as they took on the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday Night Football. And man, oh man, what a hell of a game this was. The Steelers ended up getting the win 31-28. And what did I tell you about primetime Ben? Now improving to 11-2 in his last 13 primetime games. He threw for 351 yards, 4 touchdowns, did have 2 interceptions, but him and Antonio Brown. Man, oh man, I thought what Antonio did last week was impressive. He comes back with a 10 catch, 169 yard, 2 touchdown performance. That means in the last 2 games, Antonio Brown has had 20 catches, 313 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And probably the best catch he made all day was a beautiful catch along the sideline where he got both feet down, tiptoeing in his Jordans as he sets up Chris Boswell to hit a 53-yard game-winning field goal. The man can't hit an extra point, but he can hit a 53-yard game-winning field goal, and the Steelers got the job done. 31-28. Unfortunately, once again, the Steelers didn't cover. Hell, it must be nice being a Steelers fan sitting at 9-2, as long as you're not betting on them, because they haven't won us some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. Seems like I'm taking them every single week to win, which they're doing. They're just not covering the spread because Brent Hundley put up 3 touchdowns. Jamal Williams fielding great for Ty Montgomery, and the Bay Area kid Devontae Adams got into the end zone as well with 5 catches, 82 yards. The Steelers only won by 3 points, so they did not cover you some spread, but hey, hopefully you took them on a tease or something. The Steelers still got you some money, but we'll go ahead and move on in that AFC North division now, because the Steelers are sitting pretty in first place, and I really don't think anyone's going to catch them. We had another division game between the Browns and the Bengals. The Bengals ended up getting the W 30-16 as they covered that 8.5-point spread right here to win you some money on the Bay's Golden Days. And unfortunately for the Cleveland Browns, I give you guys so much hope last week. You are still alive. You are now officially eliminated, sitting at 0-11. The Bengals wish that they could just play the Browns every game, to be honest, because they have now won 7 straight against the Browns, as Andy Dalton threw for 214 yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't think he's thrown an interception against the Browns in any of those last 7 wins against them. But the true story was Joe Mixon. I took him in DraftKings. He was a cheap option, and he paid off as he had 23 carries, 114 yards, and a touchdown. He completely dominated touches in his backfield with Jeremy Hill going down with injury. Joe Mixon is the future for the Bengals. They're now sitting at 5-6. They got to catch up to the Ravens if they even want to be a wild card team, but I don't think they do. Let's go ahead and talk about the Ravens, because they pulled off a big win on Monday Night Football over the Texans, 23-16. I don't know who really wanted to watch this game between Joe Flacco and Tom Savage, but the Ravens defense comes through once again and gets them the victory. They improve now to 6-5, and they are sitting in a wild card spot. This is a game that I told you to take the Texans plus 7. Well, hey, the Ravens only won by 7, so we got a push for you here on the Bay's Golden Days. No one really cared about this game Monday night. It's a push, so it looks like no one won any money, so it looks like no one even wants to hear about this game. We'll just keep it moving now. As we look at the Texans division, we move on to the AFC South, as we had a matchup between the Titans and the Colts. The Titans are trying to beat out the Jaguars for first place in the AFC South, and they got a game up on the Jags because they won 20-16 over the Colts. It's the first time that the Titans have swept the Colts since 2002. Yes, that's right. They have not won a game in Indianapolis since 2002. Crazy stat to hear, but the Titans finally got it done with Marcus Mariota throwing for 184 yards, a touchdown. Did have 2 interceptions, but they were able to run the ball with this exotic smash mouth running offense. Derrick Henry had 13 carries, 79 yards. DeMarco Murray found pay dirt a couple times. Jelani Walker even got into the end zone for a touchdown, and the Titans cover the 3.5-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days, and they are truly looking like the lead runners to run away with that AFC South, because the Jaguars blew a huge game this weekend to the Arizona Cardinals. They ended up losing 27-24. This is a game that's where you take the Jags in a 4.5-point spread. So they did not cover, obviously, because they lost. And Blaine Gabbert gets the W. Yes, Blaine Gabbert, the same Blaine Gabbert that was drafted by the Jaguars many, many years ago, comes back and gets revenge against Blake Bortles and the Jaguars. Man, oh man, Blaine Gabbert threw for 241 yards, 2 touchdowns, did have an INT. He also got a $40,000 win bonus because he started half the game in a win for the Cardinals, and they got it done with Adrian Peterson. Larry Fitzgerald was making great catches. That was a great back and forth between him and Jalen Ramsey, and man, oh man, what a game. And it came down to the last couple seconds. The Cardinals pull off the comeback, and they hit a 57-yard field goal on the leg of Dawson to win 27-20. And the Cardinals are still trying to scratch the surface to stay alive somehow, some way in that NFC West division. Let's go ahead and look at that NFC West division as the Seahawks and the 49ers faced off on Sunday, and the Seahawks covered the 7-point spread just like I said they would. They would easily win by a touchdown as they won 24-13, and the San Francisco 1-10ers. Damn it, why'd you have to change your name? Why couldn't you be the 2-9ers, the 1-9ers, the 3-9ers? Oh, well, oh, well. I know Harnett doesn't want any more wins so far this year because the San Francisco 49ers are officially eliminated from playoff contention. That's right, Santa Clara 49ers. Your season is over, but it actually seemed like it just started for some Niner fans as they were cheering on the field because Jimmy Garoppolo finally broke into the game, but I don't think it was on the circumstances that the 49ers wanted it to happen. C.J. Beathard comes in, throws 200 yards, did have an interception, was getting hit left and right. This offensive line, I've talked about it all year long for the 49ers. They're just getting Beathard just completely beat up. Well, he went down with only about 2 minutes left in the game, and here comes Jimmy Garoppolo trotting onto the field while Beathard is still hurt, and 49er fans are cheering. They're cheering when their own quarterback is hurt, holding his leg on the ground because, oh, look, we get Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh, I mean, I understand from one perspective you're excited about Jimmy Garoppolo, but your rookie quarterback who has been getting his ass whooped for this franchise the past 10 games is down on the ground, not moving, and you're cheering? Ah, man, that doesn't sit too well with me. It didn't sit too well with Reuben Foster. It didn't sit too well with Eric Reed. They were mad at 49er fans, wanted them to show some class, but hey, you can't really expect too much from 49er fans because they all just don't even care anymore. This season's just a wash. Who cares? Well, now they care that Garoppolo's back. It seems like they're just caring at the wrong time. Seems like they don't even know what they're doing because that stadium was empty on Saturday. The Santa Clara, a whole entire 49er history as a franchise in Santa Clara has been a failure. They haven't done anything right. Now they got Jimmy Garoppolo playing next week, most likely, and we'll see what happens. But let's go ahead and talk about the Seahawks because they're the actual team that won this game. Russell Wilson, once again, putting the team on his back with 228 yards, two touchdowns. He now has the most wins by an NFL quarterback in their first six NFL seasons. Paul Richardson had a touchdown. Jimmy Graham had a touchdown. And Jimmy Graham now has the most touchdowns for a tight end in Seahawk history. Yes, that's right. People are talking about, oh, Jimmy Graham, is he a bust? Blah, blah, blah. And shout out to the people who didn't even draft him in fantasy football leagues a couple years ago because they thought he was done. Jimmy Graham, top five, top three tight end in this league. And the way that he's been connecting with Russell Wilson lately, their offense is looking better than ever, and the Seahawks get a huge win to improve to 7-4. They're sitting in a wild card spot right now, but let's go ahead and talk about the team that's sitting in first place in the NFC West, and that is the Los Angeles Rams. Yes, can you believe it? The Los Angeles Rams are sitting at 8-3 after getting a huge win over the Saints, 26-20. I told you guys take the Saints plus the 2.5 points for the upset. Well, about halfway through the week, Marshawn Lattimore got put in an air cast for his leg. They lost both their starting corners. I thought this was a bet that I tried to fade late, but obviously I record my podcast on Tuesday. I can't update the news on that comes out on Thursday and Friday, but either way, I knew this was going to be a good game back and forth, and Jared Goff played phenomenal with 354 yards, two touchdowns compared to Drew Brees' 246 yards and a touchdown. Alvin Kamara was doing everything he could to keep the Saints in this game. He had five rushes, 87 yards and a touchdown, six catches, 101 yards and a touchdown. We're talking about a man that has been pretty much the number one fantasy player for the past 6 weeks. Alvin Kamara has been playing phenomenal, but Todd Gurley on the other side of the ball had 17 carries himself, 74 yards, and Connor Kupp had 8 catches, 116 yards, and the Rams get back on track, knock out a playoff team in the New Orleans Saints. The Saints were hot. They were on an 8-game winning streak, and the Rams just come in and put that all to an end as Jared Goff, the youngin', gets it done 26-20 in a huge game to extend that lead in the NFC West by one over the Seahawks, and we'll see what happens now is they are looking as a playoff team. They got a couple of tough games coming up, but for now, they are sitting pretty in first place and are the NFC West champions as of today. Let's go ahead and move on now from the NFC West to the NFC South. As we talked about the Saints losing, that opened up the door for the Falcons as the Falcons got a huge win, 34-20 over the Buccaneers. They improved now to 7-4, and they have won their last three in a row. And the best part about it, they covered that 7-point spread to win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Matt Ryan threw for 317 yards, a touchdown, but this story really was all about Julio Jones. 12 catches, 253 yards, two touchdowns. This was his third 250-yard game in his career. That's the most in NFL history. No other person has done it more than once. Oh, and by the way, through his first 90 games of his career, he has the most receiving yards in NFL history. This man is on another level. He is just a pure freak. It doesn't even matter who's throwing him the ball. It doesn't even have to be Matt Ryan. You can get Mohamed Sanu back there, and he'll launch up a 50-yard touchdown bomb to Julio Jones, too. Mohamed Sanu, if Matt Ryan ever goes down, if they didn't want to blow that 28-3 lead in the fourth quarter, they should have put in Sanu because he has a perfect passer rating in his career. Yes, he's 6-for-6 with 3 touchdowns, and as I mentioned, threw up that 51-yard bomb to Julio Jones. And Julio Jones, it doesn't matter if you got the kicker kicking it to him, he can still go up there and catch it because he is truly one of the best, if not the best, wide receiver of the league. Him and Antonio Brown going back and forth every week is just a beautiful thing to watch, and they are truly evolving the position of wide receiver in the NFL today. But at the end of the day, the Falcons are just happy that they got the win, and we're happy that they won us some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. So let's go ahead and keep it moving now as we look at the Panthers, who are actually the first place team in the NFC South, sitting at an 8-3 record after beating the Jets 35-27, and they won you some money by covering that 4.5-point spread. Cam Newton didn't have the biggest day with only 168 yards and a touchdown. Christian McCaffrey was getting involved running the ball. He was getting involved receiving the ball. Devin Funchess had 7 catches, 108 yards. But it was Luke Kuechly coming up huge for this Panthers team. This game was tied late, and Luke Kuechly gets a 34-yard fumble, scoop and score touchdown. He takes it to the house. Luke, I've talked about it so much on this podcast. He makes the defense for the Panthers. He comes up with a huge play. The Panthers then get a field goal late to put it out of reach, and they cover the spread and win you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days and improve to 8-3 to get in the first place in that NFC South division. And man, oh man, it is going to be interesting to see how that all plays out between them, the Falcons, the Saints. I'm sure one of those teams is going to get in as a wild card, but let's go ahead and move on now from the NFC to the AFC, because we got to talk about the number one team in the AFC right now. That is the New England Patriots, sitting with a 9-2 record. Hey, they are tied with the Steelers, but if the season ended today because of strength and schedule, because they're the Patriots and Roger Goodell loves sucking them off, they would get the home field advantage and be the number one seed. So let's go ahead and talk about Tom Brady, as he got another win over the Dolphins, won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days, covering that huge spread, 35-17, and Tom Brady passes Brett Favre and Warren Moon for the most touchdowns ever by a 40-year-old in the NFL. Yes, when is Tom Brady going to break? When are his brakes going to give out and he's just going to drive off a cliff? When is going to be the downfall of Tom Brady? I'm sitting here waiting. He ended the day with 227 yards and 4 touchdowns. Did throw a rare interception, so that was big to see, but it didn't matter because they truly did dominate the Dolphins 35-17. As you heard it in the numbers preview, this is now their 17th consecutive winning season. I said it on the 2017 NFL season preview. The AFC East is the AFC weak. It's the AFC get off your goddamn knees and stop blowing Brady, because they're just handing him the division year after year after year. The Dolphins are pretty much done now, sitting at 4-7. The Patriots cruising in with another easy route to the playoffs through that AFC East. But let's go ahead and look at who's going to be joining them in the playoffs, as that is every single game from week 12 of the 2017 NFL season, as we won you what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11 games, what is that, 11 out of the 16 games, we won you some money, got a couple pushes, we even picked the Steelers right, but they don't know how to cover a spread. We only had 1, 2, 3, 4 actual losses on the day, so I'd say that's pretty damn good betting right here on the Bay's Golden Days, and we're talking about betting. Y'all know what time it is. Where's my man Randy at?
Straight cash, homie.
That's right, Randy. It's time for straight cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden Days, where we break down every single up-and-coming matchup of the 2017 Week 13 NFL season and give you our picks and bets. That's by the point spread, and being that this is the Bay's Golden Days, y'all know the routine. Let's go ahead and kick it off with the Raiders and the Giants facing off in Oakland. The Raiders getting back-to-back home games after being down in Mexico. Well, let's see if the Raiders can get another win at home. They are favored by 6.5 points over Eli Manning and the Giants. This might seem like an easy one to pick, especially since the Giants are sitting with a 2-9 record. They lost to the 49ers, so this should be almost a guaranteed victory. No, I can't say that, because the Giants did come back and beat the Chiefs, and if the 2017 NFL season has taught me anything, is that any given Sunday, anybody can win in what is the parody of this season in the NFL. But let's get right into this game. Eli Manning, we all know the story about his wide receivers. No Odell Beckham, no Brandon Marshall. Hell, Sterling Shepard, his number one wide receiver. He still has a chance to beat some of our DBs deep. I do like the way that Sean Smith has been playing better. I think if we're able to shut down Evan Ingram, the tight end for the Giants, Eli Manning is not really going to have too many people to throw to. I'm not too intimidated by this run game, and his offensive line is not too great. So I look for, again, Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack to have big days against his subpar offensive line. On the flip side of the ball, the Giants still do have a pretty good defense. Their bookends with Jason Pierre-Paul and Oliver Vernon are two of the best defensive ends in the league, so I think that would be a great matchup versus our offensive line. Donald Penn and Marshall Newhouse are going to have their hands full covering the edges on the outside, and without Michael Crabtree, who's going to be suspended for at least two games, he is appealing it, and we should know within the next couple days if it's going to be reduced down to one or anything, hopefully. But as of now, he's suspended two games. Amari Cooper, he might be out in the concussion protocol slash dealing with that ankle injury. We're going to have Cordell Patterson and Johnny Holton step up once again, but I'm going to put the responsibility on Marshawn Lynch. As I've mentioned, this guy's been the MVP of our offense the past couple of weeks. He's been running like he hasn't been running the whole entire season. I don't know if it's coming back from his suspension. He's got something to prove, but the man is running with passion and with heart, and I think Marshawn Lynch and the ground game for this Raiders is enough to beat this New York Giants defense. I do like the Raiders -6.5. Give me the Raiders to beat the Giants to get back to a 500 record, and we'll see what happens in the rest of the AFC West. But hey, we're coming up, we're creeping and looking for that playoff spot. But let's go ahead and see who else is going to be joining us in that playoff hunt. And we start off with Thursday night football, the Redskins and the Cowboys. The Cowboys are favored by 1.5 points, and this is going to be an interesting one because it's a division game. You know, I like to keep those within a 3-point spread. This is essentially a pick 'em game, and I think the Cowboys might get back on track. As I've mentioned, the Redskins, they don't even know if they want to keep Kirk Cousins or not. They have been the opposite of what a successful franchise has been the last couple years, so I might have to pick the Cowboys to get back on track. Dak Prescott has been playing terrible. Hopefully, we'll see him get Dez involved more. Dez versus Josh Norman is always a matchup to watch. If they can get Sean Lee back this week, I think that does a huge number for this defense, so I will take the Cowboys -1.5 at home on Thursday Night Football against the Redskins. Moving on to Sunday now, we got the Vikings and the Falcons facing off in what could be a potential NFC playoff game, with the Vikings sitting at 9-2 and the Falcons at 7-4. The Falcons are actually favored by 3 points at home, and this is one that surprised me. I thought the Vikings were going to be favored. I thought maybe we'd get the Falcons plus points at home, but no, we don't. Matt Ryan against his top tier defense, I think, struggles a little bit, but at the end of the day, I think the Falcons win. I wanted to get the Falcons plus points in this matchup because the Vikings defense is so good. They can keep it close. Damn, this is a tough one to pick, but I might have to take Atlanta at home -3, the way that Julio Jones is playing right now. I don't care how good this Vikings defense is playing right now. There is nobody who can contain Julio Jones when he is in that beast mode, and I think he gets back into that mode this weekend. So give me the Falcons -3 points. The Lions and the Ravens face off on Sunday in Baltimore as well, and the Ravens are actually favored by 3 points. Yes, both these teams sit with a 6-5 record. The Ravens are actually a wild card team as of today, but I don't think they're going to get into a wild card team. As I mentioned, I haven't been impressed since they beat us this year, but they haven't impressed me in any other games. It seems like every game, John Harbaugh just keeps them close with defense and field goals. Defense and field goals. Well, I look for Matthew Stafford to have a fourth quarter comeback drive, and I think the Lions ultimately pull it off. So go ahead and give me the Lions +3 points for the upset. Moving on next, we got a division matchup in that AFC East between the Patriots and the Bills. The Bills, sitting with a 6-5 record, are also a wild card team, but just as the Ravens, I don't have any faith in either of those two teams. Even though both those teams beat us this year for some stupid fucking reason, I don't think those teams are good. I'll be blatant honest with you. I'll keep it blunt. I don't think either of those teams are going to get in as wild cards, so I will take the Patriots to win. They're only an 8.5-point spread favorite. I thought it'd be more than that because the Patriots have been getting 14, 15, 16-point spreads. I'll take the Patriots -8.5 on the road against Buffalo. The 49ers and the Bears face off, and this is going to be an interesting one to pick because we do not know if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to start. We know Bethard went down with that injury. Garoppolo, there are rumors he was going to start last week against the Seahawks. Well, I think it's going to be a lot easier transaction if he faces off against his Bears team that is sitting there with a 3-8 record. The Bears are favored by 3.5 points at home. This could be a game that's decided by a field goal, so the 49ers and the points might be the smarter bet. Jimmy Garoppolo against the Bears, I just can't trust it. Yeah, I got to see Jimmy Garoppolo play a game, so I'll probably just stay away from this. But at the end of the day, the 49ers defense has looked pretty bad. I think Jordan Howard should be able to carry this Bears offense into the end zone a couple times, so I will take the Bears minus 3.5 points. The Buccaneers and the Packers face off Sunday as well in Green Bay, and the Packers are favored by 1 point. The Buccaneers have been on a skid as of late, but they are looking to get Jameis Winston back this week. If he plays, I think that's huge for the Buccaneers, and they might have a chance for the upset on the road. If not, and if it's Ryan Fitzpatrick, I might just stick with the Packers minus 1 at home for the win. Moving on to the Colts and the Jaguars facing off in an AFC South Division matchup. The Jaguars are favored by 9.5 points, means they got to win by double digits. Give me that 10-point spread. I haven't liked anything the Colts have done this year. You guys know my motto: no Andrew Luck, no betting on the Colts. I'll take the Jaguars to get back on track and win this game by double digits against the Colts at home. Moving on next, we got the Broncos and the Dolphins. Denver is favored by 1. The Broncos have lost 7 games in a row, and the Dolphins honestly have not looked that much better after getting whooped on primetime 3 weeks in a row. I don't even want to watch this game. I don't want to pick this game. I don't want to bet any of my money on this game, but since this is the Bay's Golden Days podcast and we pick every game by the spread, I might just have to take Denver. Yeah, give me the Broncos and the defense minus 1. Moving on to the next game, Chiefs, Jets. If somehow, some way the Jets pull off an upset and beat the Chiefs, I will forever be screaming J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. But unfortunately, I think the Chiefs finally get back on track. If they can't get back on track against the Jets and the Raiders win, looks like we'll have a first place tie in the AFC West, but I think we might still be a game back after this next weekend, because I don't got too much faith in this Jets defense, this Jets offense, and this Jets organization at all. So I will take Kansas City to bounce back minus 3.5 points. The Texans and the Titans face off in another AFC South Division matchup. The Titans sitting at 7-4 need a win to try to separate themselves from the Jaguars. I think that happens as they are favored by 7 points over the Texans. The Texans haven't been worth betting on since Deshaun Watson went down with an injury. Marcus Mariota and this run offense has looked better as of late. So yes, I will take the Titans at home minus 7 points. The Browns and the Chargers. The Browns sitting at 0-11, going to Los Angeles to take on the 5-6 Chargers. The Chargers are playing hot right now, and the Chargers are minus 14-point favorites. And the Browns are going to win? Are they going to win a game? Are the Browns going to win a game? Well, I'm going to be hoping and praying that the Browns win a game, not only because the Chargers are tied right now with the Raiders for second place in the AFC West, but if you remember last year, there was a team that fucked up my whole 0-16 prediction for the Browns last year, and it was the San Diego Chokers. Well, guess what? Those Chokers have moved from San Diego to Los Angeles. Yes, I know they've been playing better and better and better, but the Browns have only been beat by 20 points once this year. That's a big 14-point spread. I'm taking the Browns and the points, and maybe we might get an upset because the Chokers were the ones who choked away a win to the Browns last year. Let's get a repeat magic. Let's get some NFL parity, and let's get the Browns a win to keep Hugh Jackson his job. I will take the Browns plus 14 against the Chargers. Then we got the Panthers and the Saints in a great NFC South Division matchup. The Saints sitting at 8-3. The Panthers sitting at 8-3. This is for first place in the NFC South, and the Saints are favored by 4 points. They did not look that great last week against the Rams. I think they're going to be able to get the running game going more this week against the Panthers, but I think Luke Kuechly once again makes a couple big plays. Cam Newton and this offense have been looking more back on track ever since Kelvin Benjamin was traded. Christian McCaffrey has been great as an offensive weapon. I like the Panthers for the upset in New Orleans in the Dome. It's not smart betting against Drew Brees at home, but I will take the Panthers plus 4 points against the Saints. Next, we move on to a matchup in the NFC West. The Rams and the Cardinals face off. The Rams will look to stay high as they are a 7-point favorite against the Cardinals. The Cardinals playing at home. The one thing that hasn't been too great for the Rams this year has been this rush defense. So if Adrian Peterson can get it going, maybe the Cardinals will have a chance, but I'm not taking Blaine Gabbert to beat the Rams, especially the way that the Rams are playing right now. So go ahead and give me the Rams minus 7 over the Cardinals on the road. The Eagles and the Seahawks face off on Sunday Night Football, and man, oh man, this would have been a great matchup if we had Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and if everybody from that Legion of Boom was healthy. Unfortunately, they're not, and Carson Wentz will still have to go up against this pretty good defense from Seattle. I like the Eagles -5 in this game. To be honest with you, if the Seahawks had a full, healthy defense, I might take the Seahawks. But the way that they're beat up so far, I've already taken the Falcons to beat them, and they did that. I look for the Eagles to do the same thing and cover that 5-point spread on the road against the 12th man, Carson Wentz. It's going to be loud, and let's see you put up an MVP-type performance on Sunday Night Football in primetime. And then, moving from Sunday night to Monday Night Football, we've got the Steelers and the Bengals in an AFC North division rivalry game. The Steelers are favored by 5 points on the road. We've talked about the Bengals a lot this year and how bad they looked. Then they fired their offensive coordinator. Then they looked a little bit better. And then they couldn't figure out who's the running back and looked bad. Now Joe Mixon is back and it looks good. I think Joe Mixon will have a decent game against the Steelers defense because they gave up a few big plays to the Packers last week. But at the end of the day, the Steelers offense is just too high. I don't think the Bengals got anybody who could stop Antonio Brown. I don't think they can stop Ben Roethlisberger at this point. And if Le'Veon Bell starts putting up historical games with like Antonio Brown is, look out for the Steelers offense and the Killer Bees. It's big game Ben once again in primetime. I will take him -5, and the Steelers better cover the fucking spread this time. You can't have 9 wins and 2 losses on a season and barely cover the spread. Hopefully the Steelers will make you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days, because that is every single matchup from week 13 of the 2017 season by the point spread. And let's go ahead and run it back real quick for you. I like the Cowboys over the Redskins Thursday night -1.5. The Falcons over the Vikings -3. The Lions +3 against the Ravens. The Patriots -8.5 over the Bills. The Bears -3.5 over the Niners. The Packers -1 over the Bucks. The Jaguars -9.5 over the Colts. The Broncos -1 over the Dolphins. The Chiefs -3.5 over the Jets. The Titans -7 against the Texans. The Browns +14 for the first win of the year. Give me the upset over the Chargers. The Panthers +4 for the upset over the Saints. The Rams -7 against the Cardinals. The Raiders, of course, -6.5 against the Giants. The Eagles -5 against the Seahawks. And the Steelers -5 against the Bengals on Monday Night Football. And that's every pick, every bet, everything you need to know right here on the Bay's Golden Days, baby. What I say, the Raiders are still alive. We still got a chance. Fuck all the teams that participated in No Win November. The Raiders are back on track in the AFC West, one game back, looking for that playoff spot. And what I tell all you cocksucking haters, the Raiders are back, baby, and we're making the playoffs, coming for the AFC West spot, if not the wild card. I don't care. It's Raider Nation every day. Win, lose, or tie, it's Raider Nation till I tie. Let's go, baby. You know what it is.
Sold it. Steady Gold, Pony Boy.